This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Welcome to a Joycast from Joy 94.9. Visit joy.org.au to find out more about our Joycasts.
Now, we have on the phone our next guest with us. We've got Miles Russell Cook, who is the curator of Indigenous arts at the NGV and one of the five curators that worked on Queer, the new exhibition that's just opened at the NGV. Welcome to the show, Miles.
Hi, thanks so much for having me.
You're more than welcome. Now, Miles, we obviously, before we talk about your involvement in Queer and you know a little bit about that exhibition, introduce you to our listeners and also just a bit of a recap on what your journey, how you've got to where you are now, where your love for the arts came about. I know we've spoken before, Miles, but you know some people might have missed out. So if you can maybe tell us, how did you get started in the arts?
Yeah, no worries. So I kind of did my undergraduate degree at MIT, and then I went on to do some postgrad at Swinburne. And started working in, like, my first job out of university was at Museum Victoria, where I was working as an assistant collection manager and then an assistant curator. And then I moved over to the NGV maybe 7 years ago. But my passion for the arts, and particularly for First Nations art, comes from my family. You know, my mother's side of the family comes from Watchabullock country in northwestern Victoria. But we have also ties throughout the Bass Strait Islands, and that's kind of where a lot of my personal motivation comes from. This show's been particularly a joy to work on because it's one of the first times I've curated outside of my own culture, but still working very much with a part of my own identity in the show, because I'm obviously also queer, like all of the curators are. So that's a bit about my journey to how I got to the NGV.
And the wonderful thing, Miles, is that the director of the gallery, Tony Elwood, that was his beginnings, wasn't it?
Absolutely, yeah.
Do you have chats together? I can tell you about this, or I can tell you about that.
Yeah, no, absolutely. He started out as an assistant in the same department, and then he obviously went on and worked in many different roles, but one of the roles he was in was as an art centre manager at Wurundjeri, where I did a bit of volunteer experience just a couple of years ago at Darwin Aboriginal Art Fair too. So we've had some really similar kind of genesis in our professional lives, which always makes for a good chat.
Excellent.
I was going to say, Miles, does that however put the pressure on you on, you know, like what path it's going to be or something?
Yeah, boss knows too much.
Not at all. It's actually really lovely to be able to talk to someone. Yeah. And, you know, we get so much support. We've had so much support for putting together this show in particular that it's been a real joy.
Now, Neil and myself have both seen the exhibition. We were at the media launch the other day, and of course we're doing the live broadcast from the exhibition, where you guys will be involved in it, of course, coming up in April. But how much of the exhibition features Indigenous artists? You know, like, well, Neil, who's personally actually bought a couple of prints from Dylan Mooney, over time, how much is involved in the exhibition?
Well, there's quite a few First Nations artists in the show. I can't think of the number off the top of my head, but one of the kind of really exciting things about putting together this show with the five curators is that we've all worked really interdepartmentally, and it's not often that you get an opportunity to work on a show where you don't really have to stick in your lane, or you don't have to work within the confines of your department. We've all been curating across all areas of the collection.
Okay.
So there's tremendous kind of scope for the fashion and textiles, prints and drawings, photography, contemporary art, international art, show art. It's kind of got everything, this show.
Right. But have you just stuck to Indigenous art? You've mixed it up as well. Right, okay.
Yeah, it's been a real joy to kind of work truly in a collaborative sense and to work across all parts of the collection.
Okay.
And Miles, just a bit of, hopefully trying to give a bit of insight into life of a curator, especially something like this. How do you do that? I mean, like, I suppose the question is, where do you start? I mean, obviously the topic is queer, so, you know, you're looking at queer subject in general. You know, did you guys, you know, was there some sort of you know, guidance as to where you should go, or was it just really more just brainstorming on what you talk about?
And also finding out information about, you know, because a lot of it would have been very closeted hundreds and hundreds of years ago, wouldn't it? Like the Michelangelo story, I think, is a fascinating one.
Well, I think that's one of the things that's been so enjoyable. So this show's been nearly 5 years in the making. In 2017, myself and then Angela Hessen, who's one of the co-curators, we're the editors of the NGV Art Journal, and we were working on a queer-themed issue. Really, it was as a response to the marriage equality debate.
Okay.
And that was only looking at 6 works from the collection, and then that kind of snowballed until we realised we could easily have done 60 works, at which point we kind of went to Tony and said, look, this has the potential for a really big show. We've actually got more like 600 works we could include. And then we kind of broadened out to this big curatorial group of the 5 of us. And I think one of the things that's motivated our kind of methodology for selecting works that have a queer story is kind of trying to think in terms of new museology and not needing to have this, sometimes people refer to it as the smoking gun, this kind of every artist is heterosexual until proven otherwise. And so not, you know, using this kind of burden of proof being on, you know, rather than saying that the inclusion of the work is because there is some connection to the queer community or there is some queer story to be had there. So whether it's the case of, say, William Shakespeare, where that can be contested. I mean, he wrote 127 of his sonnets to a man, but that's often been questioned whether that was because of the nature of their relationship as patron, or was that more, whether or not William Shakespeare, we're not here to definitively say William Shakespeare was gay, we're saying that there's a queer story one way or the other, and so that's just bringing attention to that.
Yeah, which I find really interesting. And as you said, it's not a witch hunt per se, but it's also, you know, like me being a gay man, it makes me more prouder than what I already am if I do find out somebody in history which was, you know, was swept under the carpet. But you just go, oh, and of course there would be, I'm going to mention the name again, you know, like Michelangelo, like that story, and yet he had a love affair with a woman. Well, his best friend was a woman, which, you know, like my best friend's a woman as well. But, you know, like he was a gay man who I don't think he did anything with it, or nothing's really been proven. But it's just nice to know in history that, you know, like that they're out there.
I don't know. I reckon when you look at Statue of David, you get a pretty clear sense that this might have been.
It's a bit of a giveaway, that one, isn't it?
Yeah. And
but now, no, look, it's been a real joy. Yeah.
Yeah. And listen, was it you that put Dylan Mooney's pieces in?
Yeah. So Dylan is the youngest artist in the show and probably the most recent acquisition in the show. The show, it was kind of an interesting, I guess, putting some boundaries around who we could and couldn't include, because we were only drawing from the collection as it stood with works that were being acquired anyway. So that, you know, there was no works that were acquired specifically for the show, but there were works acquired in the last 12 months. We acquired, you know, 1,000 works a year or something. Dylan's work had been on our kind of collection acquisition strategy for a while, and they were acquired maybe 6 months ago, and yet including his work in the show, I think, has brought something incredibly important to that conversation about young black queer love that wasn't represented otherwise.
Yeah, and for people that don't know him, you know, look him up, because he actually had a few pieces here at the Victorian Pride Centre, and that's where Neil saw it, and then you know, like bought a couple of pieces, you know, like, which, good on you, Neil. But also an artist that we've featured many times here on Sunday Arts is the botanical artist. You know who I'm talking about. What's his name?
Oh, I'm sorry, you're going to have to...
You're going to have to say, David.
John Pizzarelli Pinto,
Fantastic.
Who actually... he's well known for his botanical drawings, but then he's, you know, like, because we know him, and he's into the leather scene here in Melbourne, and you know, like, and he's done these amazing pieces.
Quite a contrast in works, isn't it? But yes, it's quite stunning.
They're quite fantastic, aren't they?
They are. Yeah. They certainly are.
Yeah.
You know, gift recently as well, but what spectacular works and an amazing kind of that section of the show that deals with love, desire and sensuality, to have something that's a bit more openly tackling fetish, because our collection is ultimately quite conservative, you know, in terms of it. We lack erotic art across all areas of the collection, not just in a queer lens.
Yeah.
But they're such an important thing to have in the collection, and I mean, they're one of my favourite things in the show too.
Yeah. And the sheer fact that he is a Melbourne person and a current artist who only branched out in the, you know, like doing those paintings probably four or five years ago.
Yeah, yeah, no, they're fantastic things. I'm really thrilled that they're in the show. And in good company, they're just up, you know, just down the road from Dylan's, I think.
They are on the same wall, yes. Along the same wall, yeah. So, you know, like, there are so many aspects of it. You know, like, there's rooms where there's drawings, there's room where there's fashion, there's pop icons, there's well, of course there's got to be pop icons, and you know, Kylie features and Lady Di, there's one of her dresses there, and you know, the story was told to us how she openly went into you know, AIDS wards at hospitals and would hug AIDS patient, because you can't catch it by touching them. But back then it was a no-no. You know, like, you were hidden away in those hospitals. It must have been a terrible time for a gay man. Yeah. So, you know, like, it covers so many areas, doesn't it?
Well, that's like the show. I mean, we've got near 400 works in the show. The earliest works in the show are from, you know, 6 centuries before the birth of Christ through to works made by the younger stars in the show, Dylan Mooney made last year. So, you know, we've got big names. There's Gilbert and George, Andy Warhol, Tracy Moffat, Hannah Bronte. You know, there are some really big, you know, names included in the show. But it's just the kind of trans-historical and trans-national nature of it that I think, when you kind of look at your own collection, yes, there are gaps, and our collection is predominantly skewed toward Western art anyway. And even then, there's huge gaps in our collection, but rather than trying to kind of fill those gaps, we're just talking about what we do have and the stories that are there. And I don't know about you, but as queer people, I've been visiting the NGV since I was a kid, and we're looking for these stories anyway. You know, the story's already there. It's just rare that they get told.
And that's the thing. And I think, as David was saying earlier, I mean, it's a good thing to sort of hear these stories and see, because, you know, it sort of validates our lives in a certain extent, you know, you know, who we are, because acceptance is something that we're all after, isn't it? So, you know, and this is, it just sort of to me anyway, it sort of helps it all a little bit, and helps in my standing and my confidence in being a gay man as well. So that there are all these stories, and there is so much history behind it, you know, it's not just us. There were people before us that trod the path, basically. So.
Absolutely. It's kind of like I was saying to my boyfriend about this, that, you know, these are the sorts of shows that when you go to the NGV with friends as a gay person or a queer person, and you see a work on display, one of you might already know this story, and you might say, well, you know, they were actually gay, or you know this great story, but it's just almost never that the institution validates that knowledge by putting it on the label. And so this is, I think, a pretty watershed moment for representation, and I hope it will mean a lot to the community, because it certainly means a lot to me.
I think certainly as community members, I think both David and I feel the same way, and I think I definitely do.
An honour to be part of it, and the, you know, like, and it's walking through it, you know, like, the pride you feel of it. I also love the story. I don't know how much you know about this, Miles, is that there's a teapot, and it's so gay, but it was around the time of Oscar Wilde, where people mm-hmm. were allowed to be quite flamboyant mm. because he was, and especially in Europe it was. But then, of course, it all came crashing down when he went off to jail because he was caught out mm. as being a gay man and put in prison. But then all these wonderful women rallied and got him out mm. of the country so that over to France where he could lead a normal life again. And but that teapot, it's
pretty wild, isn't it?
Well, I'm wearing a badge. I found a there was a badge available in the gift shop, and I'm proudly wearing it. It's and you know, like that,
I love
that,
it.
And that whole thing. I'm a teapot. You know, like it's a man, and he's a very gay man with one hand up, being the spout. It's very funny, people, and it's very.
And
gay.
If you look at it, we actually presented it in front in a case in a space that's kind of looking at queerness as an aesthetic sensibility. So it's kind of tackling topics around camp and queer aesthetics, but it's presented in front of a mirror, and the front of the teapot has the kind of dandy figure with a sunflower on his lapel and the limp wrist as the spout, but on the back is a, you know, almost equally androgynous female character. And that great Oscar Wilde quote, "Every day I'm finding it harder and harder to live up to my good China," and this kind of aesthetic teapot. it's very fun. Yeah. It's a good fun word.
Yeah, brilliant. Well, Miles, a pleasure talking to you. Can't wait to speak to you on the day we do the outside broadcast, and we're doing it in the Great Hall, and we're inviting all our listeners to come along that day. So that should be a wonderful afternoon.
Well, thank you so much, and please, I hope everyone gets a chance to come out. It's a free show. It's on at Level 3, NGV International, the whole of Level 3, and there's also a great book that we worked on together, so come down.
Absolutely. Thanks, Miles.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. Have a great day.
Thanks very much. We've been talking to Miles Cook, Russell Cook, here on Joy 94.9, Sunday Arts Magazine.
Joy 94.9 is a GLBTIQ community radio station in Melbourne, Australia. Support Joy 94.9 by becoming a member at joy.org.au.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast, brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.